Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 5, entitled Frustration of the Sacrifice of Daksha, text number 9. Prasutte misra striya udvignachita. Uchur vipakko virjinasya vatasya. Yat pasyanti nam duhitrinam prajisa. Sutam satim mavada dhyavanagam. Prasutti misra striya udvikna chita. Uchur vipako virginaya sevatna. Uchur vipako virginasya vatasya. Yat pasyanti nam duhitrinam prajasa. Sutam satim avada dhyavanagam. Prasutti Misra, headed by Prasuti. Striya, the women. Udvikna citta, being very anxious. Uchu, said. Vipaka, resultant danger. Vijinasya, there's light here. Of the sinful activity. Eva, indeed. Tasya, his. Dakshas. Yad, because. Pasyantinam, who were looking on. Duhitrinam, of her sisters. Prajesha, the Lord of the created beings. Daksha. Sutam, his daughter. Satim, Sati. Avadajo, insulted. Anagam, completely innocent. Prasuti, the wife of Daksha, along with the other women assembled, became very anxious and said, "This danger has been created by Daksha because of the death of Sati, who even though completely innocent, quit her body as her sisters looked on." Purport. Prasuti, being a soft-hearted woman, could immediately understand that the imminent danger approaching was due to the impious activity of hard-hearted Prajapati Daksha. He was so cruel that he could not save her youngest daughter, Sati, from the act of committing suicide in the presence of her sisters. Sati's mother could understand how much Sati had been pained by the insult of her father. Sati had been present along with the other daughters, and Daksha had purposely received all of them but her, because she happened to be the wife of Lord Shiva. This consideration convinced the wife of Daksha of the danger which was now ahead, and thus she knew that Daksha must be prepared to die for his heinous act. So here we find the description of how Daksha was receiving reactions for his aparat, for the sinful offense that he had committed, or rather series of offenses, because this is the nature of offense, that when one becomes disrespectful to the Vaishnavas, then one will continue to be disrespectful. It is not, unless one rectifies that particular mentality, it will happen again and again. So we see that in several situations. We see that here in the case of Daksha, who began to offend Lord Shiva, and then from one offense, more offenses came. And finally, his daughter left her body in such a dramatic way because the father was just ignoring her, just because she was married to Lord Shiva, who, for different reasons, Daksha didn't like. So we must be careful in somehow or other accepting everything in relationship with Krishna as very special and never ordinary. Just like Srimad Bhagavatam is a literature which gives us the actual proper perspective of things. Very simple, that Lord Krishna is the origin of everything. And that therefore, according to the relationship that any personality or any object has with Lord Krishna, it is to be given importance. So Lord Shiva's position of importance is derived from his relationship with Lord Krishna. And therefore Lord Shiva has been given a certain level of power, and therefore he is to be respected. In the same way, the demigods are the agents of the Supreme Lord. So, in this way, we also have to be careful with anything in relation to the Supreme Lord. And we have to understand that the offense is first born in the mind, in the fact that we are in our own mind minimizing the position of Krishna or things related with Krishna. We may have a relative perception of spiritual substance. We may have a relative perception of scripture. We may not be able to 100% accept the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. We see that in the Krishna Samhita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making a distinction. He says, for the sake of argument, not that this is his personal belief, but for the sake of argument, he makes a distinction that we could look at Bhagavatam from looking at the philosophical points and looking at the historical points. And we might question the historical points, and we might even consider that the historical points would be mythological for argument's sake. Right? Not that we are accepting ever that the historical points of Bhagavatam are mythological, but for those who wish to accept so, if we are not arguing that point, then we simply say, all right, we will not consider these issues. We will simply look at the philosophical points of Bhagavatam and debate on the strength of those. And the philosophical points of Srimad Bhagavatam are that ultimately Krishna is the source of all the various manifestations of energies. And this principle makes all the difference. If we simply are Krishna conscious, that means accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, accepting that whatever Krishna says is the desired platform, accepting that therefore we too in our lifestyle are far away from what Krishna desires and from the standards that Krishna has given. If we accept that, then we too are obliged to make adjustments in our life. And depending on our nature, we can make these adjustments faster or slower. We can either make them all at once or we can make them gradually. That's up to us, but we must adjust our life according to the will of Krishna. And that can never be questioned. Right? As soon as we question the points made by Krishna, we are questioning outside of the authorized purview. Because ultimately, Bhagavatam has to be accepted. There may be many details in Bhagavatam that are difficult to understand. Why? We cannot always understand why Krishna is stating certain things, but it is to be accepted. Prabhupada makes this point that bone is generally considered to be a lower contaminated substance, but conch shell is considered pure because Bhagavatam says, although it's made of bone. Yeah? And in the same way, cow dung considered pure, although generally any stool is considered to be contaminated. So this point is to is important that we accept the authority of scriptures, and that's where Daksha failed. Daksha began to rely on his own intelligence, on his own judgment, and had his own ideas about life. So that may sound a little bit oppressive, as if we are not allowing personal expression. But that is not the case. But we are not allowed to question the fundamental view of the world. We cannot develop our own view of the world, that, well, I think it is like this, I think it is like that. Because we are not in a position to do so. That is called mental speculation. In Sanskrit, referred to as manodharma. That type of occupation which is forbidden. So that would be, and that is the root cause of making offenses. The root cause of offenses is that we begin to, is mental speculation. Where we begin to approach people and situations from our own perception, from our own platform of perception, and then from our own level of intelligence, from our own mental experience. And all these elements are making up the basis for coming to an offense. Initially, it may not manifest like that. One may be respectful to the devotees. One may be appreciative of the devotees. But ultimately, and one may just have some differences. But ultimately, these differences will lead to offense because one will have faith in something other than Krishna. And then, sooner or later, principles will be outlined based on the instructions and teachings of Krishna, which will contradict with our own insights and our own ideas. And we will minimize the directions of Krishna. Or we will argue. We will argue about the directions of Krishna. That is never possible. And ultimately, that leads to the point where we will minimize the devotees again and again, because the root cause of not taking Krishna fully serious is there and then. Daksha was proud of his own prowess, of his own position of importance, and this pride made it difficult for him to accept. Therefore, it's more difficult for one who is materially successful and who is talented and qualified to bow down before Krishna. But still, this bowing down has to be done in the sense that we have to bow our own opinions before those of Krishna. And then we may use our intelligence to understand what Krishna is trying to say and how what Krishna says is true. And there we have to, we can spend a long time trying to refine the points. And we can study and so on. But as far as fundamental questions, fundamental issues cannot be questioned. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any one or anything that is connected with Him has priority over anything else in this world, no matter what it is. Right? And whether we happen to be attached to something else or not, is irrelevant. Any attachment that is not to Krishna or to the paraphernalia or associates of Krishna is totally dangerous, is the ultimate danger, and is the beginning of the fall. So the point that Daksha fell and had to suffer these reactions are there for us to notice, and it is better that we are going to the root of things than that we are trying to just avoid offenses in individual situations. If in individual situations we are trying to avoid offense, it's more difficult. But if we go to the root of things and we are simply accepting the glory of Krishna, that Krishna is never wrong, right? And that the representative of Krishna, therefore, is never wrong, right? And therefore, that we must have a submissive attitude. Therefore, it's said one must inquire in a submissive attitude. That means that submissive attitude that one must have from the very beginning, already the mentality of accepting Krishna as the ultimate authority and accepting the word of Krishna as the final, as final in any matter. And then we see that Lord Shiva's position is certified by Krishna, and that Lord Shiva has been given his particular position by Krishna. And everyone has been given some position, because karmana daivane trena jantu deupapachite, it is by divine arrangement and by karma that we wind up in a particular physical situation. So Daksha had to accept that Lord Shiva was in a superior position, but he could not. Due to his pride, he could not allow. So his material attachment became a great hindrance in spiritual advancement. And that is also for us a consideration, to avoid this spirit of making offenses by becoming proud about our own position, by becoming attached to our own ideas. It's all right to be materially attached. It's all right when we cannot immediately give up our attachments. But it's not all right if we think that that we are right. It's okay if we say, I'm not ready for this, I'm not ready for that. That's fine. But it's not okay if we make a philosophy out of it. That is the point. So many people are not following the standards of Krishna consciousness, and then they come up with a philosophy to justify that particular activity, like that Tritiya Prakriti paper, you know, the third gender, right? And then making a case that in Vedic culture there was recognition of a third gender, neither male nor female, which was socially totally accepted and integrated, which is like really a twisted conclusion. It is not factual. And so there are many such twisted conclusions. Yes. Naturally, when we rely on our own intelligence, because our own intelligence is colored by our attachment. So therefore, we like to bend the philosophy in our own favor. We like to bend the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in our favor so that we can remain as we are. So we're looking for quotes that support our present conditioned state. So we use the scriptures to justify our position, and then we want to argue because we have two quotes or three, right? But we should rather understand that these quotes must be taken in the bigger context of the more fundamental message of Krishna consciousness. So there are many detailed quotes, but these quotes are to be applied in the greater context of the fundamental philosophy of Krishna consciousness, which is that we simply have no right to independent ideas about the nature of what things are. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is making the basic definitions of reality, not us. Then, after that, we can begin to apply our intelligence. But the definitions of what is are to be collected from the scripture and not from our own ideas. So this is a big fundamental conflict that exists. So many people have their own ideas. Too many, right? And that makes it impossible for a saintly person to communicate. Right? And the saintly person is not even going to try to communicate when the tendency for mental speculation is too strong, because it distracts too much from the main business. Our process is sometimes to slash the ignorance, sometimes, but basically our primary process is the glorification of Krishna. And if we spend our whole time dealing with all kinds of arguments, how can we do? So we're dealing with all kinds of mundane arguments. But more important than that is simply to try and understand Krishna's arguments. This morning I just was looking for something on internet, and then by accident I wound up on a site of Harvard University, and I looked at all the publications in the Harvard Book Press, right? And I just stumbled in that site by accident. I was looking up something, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and boom, I wound up on this Harvard site, right? And so I saw all these books, super intelligent. I read a few of the book reviews. So intelligent, but all missing the fundamental point. Right? Brilliant, you know, all like you could see sharp, right? And like sharp points, sharp issues, but all dealing with the symptomatic manifestation of the material energy and the perception and the individual perception, right? Rather than going to the root of like taking it from Krishna, the cause of all causes, everything emanates from him, everything relates to him. And then, what does Krishna say, right, about this? If we accept that first fundamental point, that Krishna is the source of everything, and that everything emanates from Krishna, then the next thing is, then Krishna is the best authority to speak about the nature of anything, obviously. And that is the, therefore one must first take information as to what Krishna has to say, and then we can elaborate on what Krishna said, if we are sufficiently learned in Krishna's teachings and philosophy, because we can make connections with other points that Krishna have made, and in this way we can, or that the devotees of Krishna have made, the acharyas have made. So this is our only platform of discussion. And of course sometimes we will argue on the basis of logic with those who have no faith in Krishna. And we will, on the basis of logic, defeat such arguments. But ultimately, we ourselves are concerned with the arguments of Krishna. Just as Prabhupada was expert in smashing all kinds of faulty logic. But then if you see in Prabhupada's personal presentations, he is so faithful to Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. He's like, his logic is always the logic of Bhagavatam. He always uses some metaphor or some quote or some example from Bhagavatam. Right? And he builds his whole logic on that. And he sticks to that. Right? I mean, Prabhupada comes out with this sometimes unique logical points. But it's always based on, always taken back to Bhagavatam. That's where the roots are. Which means that in order to be able to do that, he really familiarized himself with what is Krishna's view of reality. And that is what we require. We require, that is submissive. Submissive is that we are simply going to accept what Krishna says. Submissive is not an external thing of being soft-spoken with folded hands and then in a very polite and gentle way asking challenging questions. That is not submissive. Right? That is acting submissive, but actually being rebellious. Right? Rebelliousness is the nature of the conditioned soul. Daksha was rebelling against the order of Krishna. Daksha could not accept that Shiva, Lord Shiva, was in a superior position. He rebelled because he, for his own satisfaction, wanted to be something. He had a desire to be something. And this is the problem. When we want a certain position, a material position. Therefore, Prabhupada said in one conversation that he was not interested in, we are not interested in PhD. We are simply interested in one, designation, and that is Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvina Nirmalam, to have no designation. That is our degree. No designation. Naham Vipranacha Narapatir Napi Vaishana Sudra. Naham Vani Nachagriha Patir. No Vanasta Yat Vatir Va. Kintu Protan Nikila Paramananda Punamritab there. Gopi Bharta Pada Kamala Yordasana Dasana Das. I'm not a Brahmana. I'm not a king. I'm not a Vaishya. I'm not a Sudra. I'm not a Grihasta, nor a Sannyasi, a Vanaprastha, or a Brahmachari. I am not any of these things. I am simply, the servant of the servant. And that is, so, Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam, to be free from any designation. So that means to be free from our own ideas about the cosmic manifestation. I think it is like this, Prabhupada said, I kick on your face, right? I kick on your face with boots, right? Yes. Put boots and kick on your face for your speculation, right? There is no gain in this. This is the cause of havoc in the world. Utpatiyaiva kalpate. It is stated that unless devotional service is based on scriptures, pancharatra vidimbina, if it is not based on bona fide scripture, then simply a disturbance. That is the explanation of the acharya. So, and this is not dogmatic. We are not accustomed to this way of thinking. We are accustomed to just think free and to allow our own mind to wander and to relate on our own instincts and from our own platform of logic. That is what we are accustomed to. But the fact of the matter is that this is not desirable. We must not try to figure it all out ourselves. We must simply try to learn what Krishna is saying. Said, yeah, but like if we just take it like that, then it just becomes dogma. Then it becomes something we're just following without having actual realization of it. But Prabhupada says, no, it's not dogma. Rather, those so-called liberal thinkers are dogmatic because they are denying Krishna, although they don't have no idea who is the Supreme Lord. They're saying Krishna is not the Supreme Lord, but they have no idea who the Supreme Lord is. So that is dogmatic. They're making statements about things and they don't know anything about it, just blind statements. Krishna is not God. Says, but they don't know God. So how can they make such a statement? So the teachers in the Krishna consciousness movement, coming in the cyclic succession of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are not just theoretical professors, but have practical experience of Krishna consciousness, have practical experience of Krishna, and therefore they are able to reconfirm the knowledge of the scripture, which is a further strengthening to us in our faith to accept this transcendental knowledge. And anyone who begins to develop his own ideas will become caught up in making offenses, in somehow or other being in conflict with the Vaishnavas. It's inevitable. Inevitable. That's, first the offenses may be of a very minor nature, but it may just be disrespectfulness, right? Simply because we're attached to our own opinion, because we have our own opinion. So one must be very much prepared to consider, I'm not important, I'm less intelligent, I don't really know, actually. And again and again, one has to remind himself. At the same time, we must collect evidence from the scripture. And if we notice that someone is acting against the scripture and apparently from our perception it is wrong, then we should speak. We should mention this. But depending on who the person is, we should deal more or less respectful. We should always be respectful with every living being, but especially with superior Vaishnavas, if we think that they are saying something that is not, that doesn't match our opinions, then we should present our arguments in a very submissive mood, which means that we're not going to argue our case with 200 different arguments. We may just present our case in a basic way, and then be quiet to hear. But if instead of being quiet to hear, we are stating our case with 200,000 arguments, then the saintly persons will become quiet. Right? They will just become quiet. It is said that the saintly person is like a cloud, that sometimes the rain may fall and sometimes not. Right? Sometimes he may be silent and sometimes he may speak. So the saintly person will speak when there is submissive inquiry. Right? When there is the desire to learn. And being in the age of Kali, the saintly person, like Srila Prabhupada, may sometimes have to chop, right? Like cut a path with a machete through the jungle. Right? So that is also there. But ultimately, a saintly person has no time to waste. His time is very valuable. His time is to be spent always in remembering Krishna. Smartavyam satatam vishnur vismartavyo najatasit sarvaviri nisedurshur etayore vikinkaram. So he cannot waste his time with people when things are not leading to Krishna. And if the road to Krishna has to go through too many curves and through too many valleys and over through too many hills and too many detours, then we have to leave it up to the material energy or to others to deal with that. For that there are books. The books are written for different purposes, but one of the purposes is that the book stands there as a statement, and one can take it or leave it, one can protest against it, argue against it, but it doesn't go away. It still stands there, and therefore one can go through that preliminary purification of giving up one's resistance. But ultimately, the Vaishnavas can only deal with someone who's in a submissive attitude. So this is what we have to develop, that submissive attitude. And it becomes more difficult as we are getting status within Krishna consciousness, as we are getting positions of seniority, to maintain that submissiveness, because then we become authority. And as soon as you become senior devotee, you become authority. People want answers from you, your opinion, and your realization. And then that begins to weigh heavier and heavier. And as the time goes on, you're almost absolute. At one point you may be the final authority, the last authority that people turn to. So you have the final word. So then it becomes more and more difficult to remain submissive. So we have to practice this, that we are considering the relativity of our own ideas, of our own mind, of our own intelligence, to safeguard ourselves from gradually becoming more and more disrespectful, and gradually coming to the point where offense, Vaishnava aparat, becomes possible. Offense to a devotee becomes possible. Because then we'll just cut ourselves off from spiritual life. So a Vaishnava must always be understood according to his position. And one has to behave in a way to respect the vows and of the Vaishnava. The vow of the Vaishnava is pure devotional service. And then there are supportive vows according to ashram with that for those vows. So we cannot act contradictory to those vows, because then it becomes a problem. So we must somehow or other maintain our a certain prescribed behavior with Vaishnavas, to be part of a culture which is supportive of Krishna consciousness. And if we are not acting according to that culture, then the element of offense begins to enter our behavior. The element of disrespectfulness, and then the element of asserting our ideas too much. And then we begin to bring down this Vaishnava to our own reality. And we're beginning to see that Vaishnava from the perspectives that are relevant in our life and all the dynamics that play in our life, which is totally irrelevant, because that Vaishnava is on another platform and he's not in the same dynamics as we are. So we cannot judge a superior person from the dynamics where of our own reality. That is the greatest foolishness. And that is actually an offensive mentality, because then one is minimizing the Vaishnava. So this is what Daksha did. Daksha was himself caught in a whole social affair with family and respect within that, and a whole social interaction. And Lord Shiva was not functioning on a social platform. He was ignoring all the social intercourse. But he was above it, not below it. Daksha was taking it that Shiva was below it and was not acting according to social etiquette, that he was of a too low platform, but he was above it. So in the same way, a superior Vaishnava is above it, is above our, above the dynamics that are within our reality. Of course, sometimes there are personalities who may pose like senior Vaishnavas, or who were once very advanced but then deviated and lost their advancement, but are still holding on to positions, right? And some are just deriving their seniority from external position rather than from real pure devotional service to Krishna. But that will not last, right? That is only, that no one can maintain. So we don't have to become like expose journalists, right? It is not necessary that we take up this mission and write big exposés about different people, because Krishna himself has already made a mechanism, you know, that anyone who begins to deviate will be thrown away from the process. I use the example of an oil spill, which is a tanker is spilling on the ocean, and then the waves and the wind in due course of time throw the oil onto the land. It all winds up on the beaches, and the ocean purifies itself in that way. So the process of pure devotional service is also purifying itself and throws off any deviation, although for a while it may appear to be covered, but it cannot be covered for long. It will again, it will just drive away any deviation. So we don't have to make it such an issue to expose the deviations. Because again, we might be wrong. We might be exposing deviations that are not there. And then, you know, bang, then we get caught up in Vaishnava Parat. That doesn't mean that we should go to the most extreme extent. If we find chicken in the fridge of a Vaishnava, right, then we may question, and we must question. And you may think that the example is extreme, but there is in the history of ISKCON, there is such an episode where there was chicken in the fridge of one leader, right? And questions had to be asked, right? Because he had become involved with some lady, right? And the chicken was hers, right? But some inquiry was appropriate, you know. What's that chicken doing in your fridge? Is that a vegetarian chicken? They make vegetarian chickens. They do. Anyway, we are not at all so there should be some spirit of being on guard of the purity of senior Vaishnavas, and not that there is a big show and that nobody can say anything. But otherwise, it is a fact that if the Vaishnavas are dedicated and following, then we cannot understand, because they are on another platform and they are no longer bound by all the same conventions like everyone else. A Vaishnava has no responsibility to his family. He doesn't. He first has responsibility to Krishna. Yes. He may decide to take responsibility for a family. And if he becomes a grihastha, then he agrees to take responsibility. The vow of grihastha means, I will vow now to take care of a family. Right? That's what it means, getting married. It doesn't just, I vow to take care, actually. It's like in modern times that idea got lost a bit, you know, like in the traditional way, that was like traditional marriages, that was a big issue, right? Take care, you know. Are you going to take care of this lady? Now it's no longer like that, you know, everybody takes care of himself and we're just together as long as there are good vibrations, you know. When we are good vibrations, then we stay together. And if there are no good vibrations, then we go. But the traditional arrangement of marriage was that one had to take care. Yeah? And it is a fact that in a spiritual marriage, it is like that. One is, so a grihastha, yes, he has family duties and responsibilities. But one who is not a grihastha, he doesn't. He has no obligations. He's already met all that in the service of Krishna. Still, he may choose to be kind to his family and so on. That's another matter. But the obligation is not there. Devarsi bhutaptan niram pitrinam nakinkaru nayanrini sarajan yasaranam yasaranam saranyam. Anyway, it's... brain doesn't work so well. We didn't sleep too much last night. So the bottom line is that we must develop a submissive mood to find the answers of Krishna. Therefore it says, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions, and we must accept that. And we must simply understand how Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Then we will be safe from developing this offensive mentality, safe from making mistake. Now, there may not be gross Vaishnava aparat, but there may be not a fully respectful attitude. There may be some disrespect in our heart. It may not even come out in our behavior, but it may be in our heart. But even if it doesn't come out in our behavior and it's only in our heart, still faith cannot develop. Then our faith cannot fully develop. Only if we can have this submissive attitude and say and see that here is a person who is dedicated to the teachings of Krishna, then we can have proper relationships. And so therefore it is stated that before the spiritual master, one should always be a fool. Right? One should always place himself in the position of a fool before the spiritual master. One should not just argue and argue, but one should place himself as a fool and then be the willing instrument, right? When he says jump, then one must jump. And that is what Prabhupada really taught, and that is what this movement really is, and that is the core of this movement. That is the core of the temple devotees, of the initiated devotees who are actually ready to jump, right? And that is the path, the Nivritti mark. There's two paths in Krishna consciousness, the Nivritti mark and the Pavritti mark. The Nivritti mark is the path of ending material life. The Pavritti mark is the path of improving life, improving the quality of our life, right? And being concerned in improving the quality of life and simultaneously, spiritually and materially. That is Pravritti Mark. Nivritti Mark is just jump wherever, whatever the instructions is. If the spiritual master says the grass is blue, then the grass is blue. Yeah. Your eyes tell you it's green. It may look green, but it is blue because the spiritual master just said it's blue. When the spiritual master, like when Srila Prabhupada says that a mosquito cannot just drill a hole in the skin, but enters its tentacle into the pore holes of the body, and then we accept that as factual information. Just like there's no more discussion about it. And it doesn't matter if different scientists have studied the mosquitoes for 300 years and have written books about the various stinging techniques of mosquitoes, right? We couldn't care less. You say, but like we have it on microfilm, we don't care about the microfilm either, right? It's in the pore hole, right? And this is what Prabhupada taught us, and this is what he wanted, so much faith and so much trust, and so much surrender. Therefore, Daksha's big problem was that he did not submit himself to a spiritual master. Yeah. He was not submissive. And ultimately, one has to become a disciple, right? And disciple means one has to become submissive. So, any questions, any comments?
One question. Yes, would you tell me a bit more about Sati and the whole thing that Shiva was married to Prabhupada? What was said that he was married to God at the same time?
At different points in time. She returned again as the daughter of the mountain king, Parvati. So Sati is simply another manifestation of the same personality. That's how it is. And then externally, she sometimes manifests as Parvati and sometimes as Sati. But ultimately, same. On a higher plane, the same personality. Shakti Tattva, expansion of Durga. So Lord Shiva is really married to Durga. Actually. And Parvati and Sati are dead. Yeah, she may have a material body. That's okay. She has a material body, but that doesn't mean she's an ordinary jiva. You see? She has a material body, no doubt. Sati had a material body, but that doesn't mean that she's jiva tattva. She's Shakti tattva. She's not a jiva. Ramananda Roy also had a material body. You know, but he was Shakti tattva. It's an expansion of Krishna's energies, not the ordinary jiva expansion. No, not having a material body doesn't mean that you are under the modes of material nature. Prabhupada also had a material body. Was he under the modes of material nature? Yeah, no, it was not a spiritual body. Okay. Sati? No, I don't think so. I don't think she was like a pure devotee, necessarily. So I don't think it was a fully... Yeah, I mean, to some extent. It's certainly like the body, the demigods, right? Their bodies are the instruments of the Supreme Lord. But they are not described as fully Niskama Bhaktas. Right? So, therefore, they are described as Sakama, as having some material desire. Right? So, I wouldn't say that they are on the same level as Prabhupada, or personalities like Narada Muni, right, who are 100% dedicated to devotional service, and therefore have spiritualized bodies, and then Narada even got a spiritual body at one point, because his body had already become spiritualized.
Karmana. I asked you the question here before, whether two Vaishnavas have different opinion, and you remarked ultimately you take the opinion of your spiritual master.
Can you do?
But still then the fact remains that there are definitely different opinions.
Yeah, and Prabhupada doesn't, and the Acharyas don't make a problem at all about it, you know. There's so many different opinions about so many things, but these are all like about details. And sometimes the detail can be quite substantial, you know. For example, if Lakshmi, you know, some Vaishnava stated that couldn't recognize Lakshmi as that Shakti Tattva, but we're seeing her as Jiva Tattva. You know? But they're still Vaishnavas, right? So, you know, as long as somebody understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we are accepting him. And then, so amongst sampradayas, there are big differences. And then within the sampradaya, the acharyas also have different understandings on technical points that may be there. Yeah. But these differences are not essential. They are not essential in the sense of hampering us in our progress to go back to Godhead. Yeah. But in terms of understanding the technical ins and outs of all the workings of Krishna's energies, right, and of Krishna's personal expansions is very complex. Very, very complex. And so many points come up in regards to that. You know, just like the other day, Avadhuta Roy brought up the point of free will and predestination. And it's just one of those points which is complex, because it really seems that in one sense, Krishna knows everything. And you can then argue, then Krishna must know when someone will surrender and when he will not surrender, right? So, and so on. So, and then that is all fixed, you know. So then it's just waiting till that day comes that I'll surrender. It's nothing I can do. It's just fixed, right? And then, if you say, yeah, but you can do something to accelerate that process, you know, but say, no, well, the opportunities will come, but Krishna will already know if I'm ready to take it or not. It's like nothing I can do. You know, this is all like already fixed. But it's not. Somehow or other, the freedom of choice is always there. So ultimately, it's because Krishna is giving it. And so ultimately, just with philosophical wrangling, you don't get there. You have to accept that there is a there is some mystic aspect, some inconceivable aspect in this element of predestination and free will. Yeah, the interpretation is about what Prabhupada said, sure, what Krishna said.
Not so easy, because like the other way, Gaurav Prabhu gave the example that somewhere in the 80s, he was, we heard the Vyasa people who sing, what was it, Radhi Shyam sing the Radhi. Okay, just to bring up a point, so he's saying that, and not one particular Maharaj.
Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said you can. Not one particular Maharaj. Prabhupada actually said. Yeah. No, no, I understand. But I'm just making that just that you know it also. Yeah.
Yeah. So one time they may take like the position of chastising.
Yeah, they may change opinions, of course, you know. Don't take bath in Radhakund, and then a few years later they may be right there in Radhakund. So that happens as one's insights grow, one's opinions may change. That could happen. But not on major points. On details, yes. But never on a major philosophical point. The position of Krishna is fixed. The position of his expansions is fixed. The position of the creation is pretty much fixed. A little detail may be understood in a little different way, you know. So, like we see in the commentators on Bhagavatam, they are describing how the different yugas are following one another. And then that sometimes after one particular yuga, there is a partial annihilation. And some say it happens every time, and some say it happens only sometimes. What? Okay, there you go. He remembers it even better than me. He says it's after the Manvantar, which is like in one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manvantars. Or 40, it's like 1,000 Divya Yugas, a cycle of 4 Yugas times 1,000 is one day of Brahma, divided by 14 Manvantars, periods ruled by different Manus. So, and then we're talking about a partial annihilation after the Manvantars, and then there's a debate on that. And then we get the, there's so many things like that, you know, you get that point about the shifting of the yugas, right? Where the, you know, like suddenly the Treta and the Dwapara, they change around. Right? One comes before the other. All kinds of complex points are coming up in the philosophy, and you know, the acharyas have different opinions about it. It is a fact. And Karanga collects them. Yeah. Okay, I am finished. Boom. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.